Chapter 2, 0948 GMT. At 12 minutes to 10 this Friday morning, under an overcast winter sky, Tash Brand was crossing the River Tyne, heading north on her way home from work at Government House. The Gateshead Millennium Bridge, built to commemorate a calendar transition that had happened 27 years before 30-year-old Tash was even born, was showing its age, she often thought. It was pedestrians only, a tilting bridge long since rusted into immobility, and the walkway surface, heavily remodeled, could sometimes be roughed up so you had to watch your step, even in the daylight, at least on a gloomy, overcast winter morning like this one. But Tash liked to walk. She took her time. In fact, this was a few minutes before 0948, as she would remember later. She had already slowed up, feeling calmer the further she got from house, with its endless adrenaline-pumping culture of urgency. It was like that even on relatively quiet days, and there were few quiet days. This morning she was emerging from yet another unscheduled all-nighter. This one caused by another attempted landing of French boat people, disgruntled citizens of Federal Europe, in the Wash. She came to a halt halfway across the river, took a breath, leaned against a handrail and just looked. The light was poor, which wasn't unusual for this time of year. She had grown up in Surrey and had yet to get used to the shorter midwinter days up here, with sunrise only an hour and a half ago. Her father often reminded her of how her mother, Nigerian-born, had never got used to English winter days, even in the south. But still, the view was rich. Behind her, the big box of Government House, on the Gateshead Bank, a monument of smart wood, a righteous carbon sink from its woodpile foundations all the way to its grass-covered roof. You couldn't get more modern than that, or much newer. It was only a year since the English federal government, long decamped from a flooded London and eager to establish its credentials as a uniter of a new England of quasi-independent regions, had moved here after a 5-year stay in Birmingham. There had been some controversy about the functions of government being carried out so far north. The comms links made it irrelevant where Parliament sat, of course, but this was felt to be undiplomatically close to the surly English-Scottish international border. What the hell, Tash thought, looking back. House itself was a spectacular sight, and the views it offered from within could be even more spectacular. When the sun rose over the North Sea, on a good day, some swore you could see the turning blades of the huge Dogger Island wind farm far out to sea. In fact, it looked as if it might eventually turn out to be one such good day today. Looking back at that eastern horizon now, she saw the clouds growing ragged, revealing the deep blue of a winter morning sky. Meanwhile, to her left, Old Newcastle sprawled across its own hilly bank, connected to the Gateshead side by multiple bridges thrown across the Tyne, some centuries old, all of them echoes of originals constructed back when this place had been one terminus of Hadrian's Wall. And the city itself offered a very modern view, with its grassed-over roofs, tree-crowded avenues, white-painted buildings. Nowadays, it had the look of a theme park, so her father often said sourly, when the sun caught it right. Not many of her colleagues made this walk, though it was a reasonably short trek to the Manors District, to the east of the city centre, where accommodation for junior workers like Tash had been commandeered when the government had come to town. Most used the traffic tunnel that had been cut beneath the river for speed and security. Tash, though, actually preferred being forced to take a little more time than the minimum when she got the chance. And she was slowly learning. She liked being close to the river too. Like all British rivers, the Tyne was well controlled, from drainage schemes across the floodplain further west to the barrier at its mouth on the east coast protecting it from North Sea storm surges. Looking down at the waters, grey in the cloud-choked light, she always had the sense of something bigger than herself, processes shaping the world on a scale far larger than she was ever likely to affect. Even if she was now a worm in the core of the apple of government, as Mel had once called her. She smiled at that thought. That was Mel Kapoor for you, always ready for a smart-ass put-down in case she ever got pretentious. Not to mention she, similarly acidic. Though Tash gave as good as she got. These were her closest friends, since college days, a decade back. Herself, Wu Shi, Mel Kapoor. Always in her thoughts, it seemed. Maybe, standing here, dawdling before going home, her subconscious was prompting her to give them a call. It was an unusual day, after all. She knew that Mel was eclipse-watching over the Southern Ocean. Aboard Sky Thrust 2. Lucky fiend. And she, luckier yet, was actually up in space, aboard the Lodestone Station, ready to make his own observations. Waiting for an eclipse that was due about now, she vaguely remembered. What an experience for them. The in-jokes, as they had called themselves ever since a gloomy virus lockdown term they had shared at Yale. They were all studious, thoughtful. Kind of serious, she supposed now, looking back. They had drifted together as other groups had formed around them. Groups often self-identifying around in-jokes of some kind. Relics of parties, or through the frat houses, which were nothing but extended in-jokes themselves. It was she who, as the three of them had sat gloomily in the corner of some bar one night, had come up with the name. We are the in-jokes, and for us the in-joke is, there is no in-joke. Well, it seemed funny at the time. Although it had been the Pacific incident that had caused them to bond for life, she supposed. When the three of them had nearly died in a botched survival exercise. One of Xi's astronaut cadet tests. A chopper drop into the water. They worked together and had got out of there, and had never been out of touch since. Even though their careers had diverged, with Xi heading for research in space, Mel for astronomy, and Tash, always less academic, her degree subject had been the sociology of science, went into government work. Still, they stayed together. Later, she would remember that was what she was thinking of, her friends. What she was thinking of when the blink came, and the light went away. Suddenly, standing there on the bridge, she was plunged into pitch darkness, and a hard rain fell across the face of Tash Brand. It was a short, sharp burst out of nowhere. From a sky thick with cloud, Tash, shocked, bewildered, in sudden darkness, turned her head away, fumbled for her hood. But she staggered, losing her orientation, and stumbled off a curb, into the central walkway, nearly turning an ankle. Pitch dark. What the hell? The light had just gone, with maybe a few seconds of fade out, and she couldn't be sure about that. It was as if she were deep in the bowels of house, and the power supply had failed. Not that it ever would. But she was outdoors. Somebody screamed along the bridge. She heard distant car horns. Pitch dark. Out in the open, under the sky. For God's sake. You didn't get power failure blackouts outdoors. Standing there, unwilling to move, to take a step. She realised she was thinking like a child, slowly, utterly bewildered, not logically. But she felt helpless as a child. All the control she thought she had had over her world stripped away. She took a step, stumbled again, nearly tripping on that curb again. A rail. She had been leaning on a handrail. That must be just ahead. She reached out, flailing, found the rail, clung to it with her gloved hands. Then, with more confidence, she stepped back up to the raised curb. She tried to take stock. She was standing on the bridge still. She could feel the rough surface under her feet. She had been looking out over the water, right here. She thought she heard the lap now. So that was still here. She felt a deep, visceral, almost superstitious fear. You didn't get power failures out of doors. So what else could have happened? Her sight was gone. No, she heard herself sob. But she had heard that scream from somebody else on the bridge. Now more voices were calling. Think, Tash. Why would other people be calling out if you had gone blind? Why sound their horns? She clung to her rail and cast about. There, a spark of light, like a phone, away off down the bridge. back the way she had come, towards the south. Was there a vague patch of light in the sky beyond that? Maybe her eyes were dark adapting. A phone! The spark of light was a phone. Stupid, stupid. She scrambled in her pocket for her own phone. Don't drop it, for God's sake. And flipped it open. A little rectangle of light, dazzling. The usual mundane menu. Shit, shit. Thank you, thank you. She waved the phone about, like a torch. It shed a glow around her, a few meters in any direction. She was still on the bridge. There was the river, even, returning the faintest of reflections from the glow of her phone. She felt as if her bubble of perception, her awareness of the world around her, was opening out slowly, slowly. She took a step back from the rail, her rail, though she held onto it for comfort, and looked around properly. Dark. Everywhere. A sudden night. Below her, the river, now looking a deep, oily black. But above her head, one stray light, hanging from the bridge structure, somewhere like a forgotten Christmas decoration. To her left, the city on the north bank was visible, just, with a few lights showing, lit windows, a few ad hoardings. Maybe her eyes were adapting to the dark. To her right, the big pile of house. On the south bank became more clearly visible too. Patches of it shining with the glow of artificial lights. The big, clear wood window panels, vivid rectangles. But much dimmer than daylight, she realised now. And there were those people on the bridge with her. She hadn't really even registered their existence before the dark came. More and more glowing pinpoints in the dark. People digging out their phones and watches and headbands. The speckles of light glittered and bobbed, like a swarm of fireflies along the bridge. Everybody seemed to have stopped still, their faces pale masks in the scraps of light. She no longer felt existentially scared. I'm not blind, at least, but utterly bewildered. She realised that nobody on this bridge across the city could know what the hell was happening in these first seconds, minutes. Nobody. They all had to work it out, one way or another. Millions of sudden nightmares, and maybe it went much further too. And she felt colder, suddenly, and gripped her lapels to close her overcoat tighter. But that was surely just a reflex, imagination. Or maybe not. Had some weather system rushed over? That was possible. Her father had always told her she was of a generation that had grown up blasé, used to freak climate events, of a frequency and severity that his own parents had never known. But the sky above looked deep black, not the grey of a regular, thickly overcast morning, like an overcast night. A streetlight came on, not far away from her on the bridge. Only one. Some kind of emergency response? Somebody cheered raggedly. It dazzled her. She turned away. And more lights were coming on now, she saw, across either bank, across the twin conurbations. More streetlights, more lit-up doorways. And she imagined people fumbling in the sudden dark for switches. On the bridge itself, people were moving now, released from the stasis of shock. Going one way or another. Some came running past her, some staring into phones, speaking into them, as if led by the phone's light. But Tash stayed still, casting around, still trying to figure this out. The sky was what counted, not the ground, the people. Something wrong with the sky. The cloud cover had been breaking up to the south and east, she remembered. There had been clear blue sky before. Again, she looked that way, beyond house and to the horizon, the direction of the ocean. She saw no blue sky now. Her eyes, increasingly adapting, saw only a swathe of darker sky where the clouds had broken up. And she saw stars, scattered above that oceanic horizon. Stars? At this time in the morning? She still wasn't scared. Not since that first shock had worn off, just bewildered or awed. Somehow it was all too big to be scary. Bigger than the river, she thought, as the river is bigger than me. You can't hope to control it. But then, thinking about the sky and the stars, she had a really stupid idea about what was causing this, or at least a connection. Really stupid. But it was the only lead she had, and she knew who to call. She lifted her phone. Her father was calling, she saw. "Phone, hold Dad," she said. "Get me Melissa." A smiling face, a shock of strawberry blonde hair. "This is Mel Kapoor. If you need..." "Hey, Mel, when you get this, I'm in Newcastle, just out of the office. Look, it's dark here, and, well, where the cloud is broken up, I see stars. Stars. And it's not yet 10 in the morning, I think. Look, could it be something to do with the eclipse?" She had never seen a total solar eclipse herself, but she knew that one was in progress now. When the sun's light was blocked out by the moon, if you were standing in the shadow cast by moon on Earth, yes, there could be stars to be seen in a daytime sky, the planets. But she also knew that during any eclipse, the shadow was confined to a narrow track across the Earth, depending on the relative positions of sun, moon, Earth. And today, that narrow track was where Mel was, in the ocean somewhere south of Africa, half a world away. Not over Newcastle. But she persisted. "I know this is really dumb, but this seems to have cut in just when the eclipse was due. Could something..." "Shit, I don't know how to frame the question. We shouldn't even have a partial eclipse up here. Has something, well, gone wrong with the eclipse?" Mel Kapoor's face showed up on her phone now. Just a two-dimensional image, but live. Red hair, blue eyes, against a dark background. "That is really dumb. Hey, Tash. But listen, I'm with the Astronomer Royal. If anybody can figure it out, she will." Tash tried to take this on. "So, it's happening down there too." "Right. Well, if somebody turns the sun off, it's going to be a kind of widespread phenomenon."
"Turned the sun off? Do you think..."
"I don't think anything just now, Tash. Not enough data. We're only minutes into this. Well, whatever this is. And, Tash, we ought to try to call she."
Just like Tasha's first impulse to think of friends.
"Yeah, in jokes together. He's on the lodestone, in space." She paged through her phone, hit a link that went through the International Space Agency, the NHSA, waited without much hope for a connection on a line meant for emergencies only. Which this was, she supposed. Now Tash heard, from the Newcastle bank, what sounded like a crumpling crash, a wailing car alarm, a scream, and elsewhere, laughter, a police siren howling. Still, the darkness lingered. "I think I should go back to house," she said. "Whatever this is, I think the governments are going to be headless chickens for a while." Mel smiled. "So go find your flock. I have to call Jane, Mel's daughter. Tell her Auntie Tash says hi. I'll try she as well. And if I find more here, I'll get back to you. Keep your phone on." Tash pushed a bud into her right ear. "Will do. And I should call my dad. Phone, do that now." She hurried back over the bridge, watching her step, towards the still brightly illuminated government house. Every step she took, she hoped the clouds would clear, that the sun would turn back on, that this would just go away. It didn't. "Mel, you still there?"
"Yeah."
Mel sounded breathless, as if she was hurrying too. "This is going to change all our lives, isn't it?"
"More than that, honey. More than that."
Somewhere an ambulance wailed, and another burst of rain splashed over her face and hair. It felt as if it were getting colder by the minute. The rain felt like sleet, in fact. She hurried on, through the disconcerting dark.